Hello, guys. Thanks for tuning in to the Not the Top 20 podcast with me, Ali Maxwell, alongside me, George Ellick. This week, League One and League Two, they were in action on the weekend as the championship teams had a bit of time off, those who aren't on international duty anyway, and it was a fascinating weekend. Of course, it was. A, it's in our interest to say that. B, it actually was. And C, we are in the midst of the run-in, and so there's always interesting things to talk about. So League One and League Two on the agenda today. We should mention that terrestrial highlights show as Quest announced that the show will be extending to 2 hours from its normal 90 minutes from now until the end of the season. Now, this is a big thing, a big commitment for Quest, and will mean more time on League One and League Two. So we caught up, or I caught up with Colin Murray to talk us through it, and he explains the decision, explains why he campaigned so hard from it. That'll be in the middle of the podcast between League One and League Two section. George, at the top of League One is where we're going to start. Luton march on. They beat Doncaster 4-0 and they are 26 unbeaten. I'm going to frame the start of the show. I'm just going to read out what Matty Blair said before the game. Matty Blair, Doncaster midfielder, very talented player as well. He said, "I've said it from day one. I believe we're the best team in the league. We're just not the most consistent. We've got 9 games to go and I'm fully confident 100% that we can win all 9. I know Luton haven't lost at home all season and it'll be a tough game, but I'm confident we can go there and get a result. When we played Luton back in September, I thought they were the best team we've played, but we're better than them. That's no disrespect to anybody. That's just what I believe. So this weekend, it's the best team in the league against the most consistent team in the league."
Yeah, he looks like a bit of an idiot now, to be fair. But he has to believe that. So I don't think, I mean, he's going to obviously deal with some ribbing from his fellow professionals.
He did all of Saturday afternoon. But
he's obviously, he knows it's a very big game. I'd be surprised if he actually believed most of what he said, given the run of form that they're on, which has obviously continued after the hammering at Kenilworth Road. It's probably a case of just trying to lift the fans and lift the players and instill some belief into them. He's an experienced guy. He's been at the club for a while and he's been around at a few clubs at this level. So not a massive shock to hear him try and G them up. And I'm sure he's not too embarrassed that it hasn't really paid off.
For a lot of teams in the EFL, or for almost every team in the EFL, you will have a blip at some point. A blip maybe stretching 5 games, maybe 6 games. We've seen Portsmouth had a very high profile one, if we're looking at the top of League One. I suppose Sunderland, there was that period where they were drawing so many games, 5 out of 7 or something similar. Luton's blip was basically drawing to Coventry, beating Rochdale but only scoring 2, drawing to Plymouth, beating Bradford but only scoring 1, and drawing 2-2 with Gillingham.
I guess their blip was the first few weeks of the season, wasn't it?
The first 3 games. Lost to Portsmouth, drew with Sunderland, lost to Peterborough.
Just acclimatising to their new surroundings, you know? Or maybe it's still to come.
Just remind listeners why we liked Luton before the season and what you think about them now, basically.
Well, I think they were, for 2 years in a row, in my opinion, the best team in League Two. And a lot of people get angry at that because they'll say the best team finished at the top and all that stuff. But you know, you can still form an opinion based on, you know, even if, for example, even if Sunderland pit Barnsley to third position this season, for example, I would still say that one team, in my opinion, over the season was better. And I think Luton, for whatever reason, had complacency issues, which meant that they didn't go up 2 years ago and then didn't win the league last season. But in terms of the way that the style of football they played and the way that when they clicked, it was obvious that they were the team who would be able to step up the best. And we've seen that this season. And even since Nathan Jones has left, they've continued to do so. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with the managerial situation in the summer. I think that they are just riding the crest of a wave and have done for so long. And the work that went into this squad and into this run and into this rise up the leagues took a few years. And that's why it's sustainable.
Yeah, you talk about the managerial situation. That's another remarkable part of this Luton story. Nathan Jones, the man, you would say, who led them upwards and took them towards the very top of League One, obviously left for Stoke. And Mick Harford has been in caretaker charge, has been in interim charge since then. And his quotes are amazing. He keeps saying, I'd basically try and keep myself to myself, basically try not to say too much to the players, because I don't feel like I can add that much, because the players are just so on it. They're so motivated. They're so at one with the system right now that I don't really need to do much. Now, this flies in the face of a lot of how we analyse football and how we think of football. And I don't just mean us, but sort of general fans in across the world, the idea that you can have a manager that isn't really doing much. You know, we're going to talk about managers who have been sacked today. Two managers on Sunday were sacked. We're going to talk about what they might have done better, whether it was fair or not, and who might come in and have a massive impact. Well, Luton, to all intents and purposes, don't have a manager at the moment, and they haven't suffered at all for it, which is kind of fascinating. Speaks to the squad building that they did, which you touched on there. I wanted to give a shout out to Jack Stacey. He's the right back for Luton. When we've spoken about Luton before, we've often spoken about James Justin, the young left back, who is right-footed, would nominally or would probably rather play right back, but has been pushed to the left because of the form of Jack Stacey this season and what he offers the team. That has been abundantly clear all season, but no more so than on the weekend. And in the last few weeks, Stacey has been a one-man wrecking ball down the right side. We've spoken about how when you play a diamond formation, the attacking output of your fullbacks is so important, and if the opposition can stop them and can mark them out the game, things can get a bit stodgy, things can sort of break down in the centre of the park. While Stacey, in the way that he beats his man, how powerful he is running with the ball, his unbelievable stamina to be able to play this role and play so many games this season, and also his final ball in the final third, even shown off some decent finishing ability this season. He's absolutely sensational. And he was all over it on the weekend. Now, excitingly, we've got an update football index-wise. We've got a few new players being added to the platform, George.
Yeah, we do. And Stacey is one of them, as you mentioned. I think him and James Justin's already up there. They will be very exciting players in the Championship. Even if they stay at Luton, they'll be exciting. And obviously, if they move on, they could be as well. I know that Jack Stacey was quite close to leaving in the summer to a club higher up the pyramid, so it wouldn't be a surprise to see people coming back in for him. We've also got Elliot Embleton, who's, of course, had a fantastic season at Grimsby on loan from Sunderland. Callum Robinson, who's been fantastic for Preston, but obviously been out with an injury for the last few months.
Kerim Marabti of Marabti. Birmingham. Yeah, we Marabti. Had a request for him. They signed him in January, and he'll be added to the platform as well.
That's the first time I've ever said his name. I didn't even say it, so I just said Kerim. Giovanni Brown, of course, from Cambridge, a very, very exciting player indeed. The aforementioned Jack Stacey, Pelly Radicampanzu at Luton, who looks to have a huge future, and Marcus Brown on loan from West Ham at Oxford. It was known that a lot of teams in the Championship were keen to take him off Oxford's hands in January, so it wouldn't be a surprise to see him get a fairly lively loan again next season. So those are the players going up on Thursday. The ones I think we both agree on, Stacey. I, having seen a lot of Marcus Brown this season, it would be a huge shock if he wasn't playing at a few levels above the one he's currently at the moment. So he's probably one for the future as well.
Quite inconsistent, Brown, though, isn't he? Like,
I think his consistency issues are possibly down to the competition for places in his position. So he rarely gets a run of games in the team consistently, and he's had fitness issues as well all season. So whilst I get that, and this is the first time he's ever played first team football as well. It's his first proper loan, because the one at Wigan didn't really go into plan. And then Pelly Radicampanzu is another player who I think is obviously destined for far greater than League One football. So they're the three that I'm most interested in.
Yeah, I've cleared the decks to an extent in my portfolio ahead of these players being released.
Have you?
So I got out of a few. I think I was even on Jay Rodriguez. My thinking with him was Rodriguez is worth something like 75p. And at the time I bought him, it struck me that if West Brom went on a run and got promoted or even got to the playoffs where, you know, they'd be in the news, in the media, and Rodriguez was a key player, then he could be flying upwards. Now, that's not happening necessarily, but I wanted to create a bit of space. I didn't want to put too much more money into the platform, if I was honest. So created a bit of space, and I'm looking forward to getting involved, seeing what these guys are in terms of share price when they get added to the platform. So we know that many of you have got involved already, many of you enjoying yourselves playing Football Index, and it's been great to hear who you guys have gone for and who you are requesting to be added to the platform. We're sifting through the requests, we're putting them to Football Index, and they are making sure that they will be adding more and more players to the platform over the coming weeks. So please do send in your requests. You can also, if this sounds interesting to you and you haven't checked it out yet, do have a look at Football Index online on the app. And if you want to sign up, you can use our referral code to get a £20 bit of bonus cash. So the referral code is NTT20. When you sign up to Football Index, if you use that code, you will have £20 bonus cash to play with if you deposit £20 or more to get going. At Barnsley in second, George got a big win and a very late win. It was a tense game, and you could see in the flesh that they are feeling the pressure of Sunderland's good form. But they got the win. They got the win.
Yeah, they weren't ugly. I think their qualities and showed towards the end of the match. But that first 15, 20 minutes, I mean, they had to ride out a bit of a storm from Walsall. Mm. Walsall scored a goal that I'm absolutely amazed that the foul was given on Ethan Pinnock, who I think he was as shocked as everyone else. Where I don't think he saw any infringement. He just went up for a header and got there first. It was a fairly contested header. It wasn't late in any way. And a fantastic finish as well, but not counting, which is a massive shame for them. Walsall just feel like a team at the moment who can't really buy any luck. To be honest, they're now in 21st position in the relegation zone. Unthinkable a few months ago. You and I predicted them to go down, and a listener who we both know, I think, texted another friend of ours saying that that would be a prediction that would go down for the ages, suggesting it was so bad, and that, yeah, there they are now. So cheers for that.
Yeah, I saw this one, and I thought I was really interested to see the reaction of people that we follow on Twitter. A lot of the journalists covering Walsall and Barnsley, and a lot of Barnsley fans, and a lot of Walsall fans. And there was a general sense that Barnsley got away with one, that they were lucky even to be level heading into injury time, and therefore they snatched a win. And I don't disagree with that. What I do disagree with is that, you know, Walsall battered Barnsley, and I heard it suggested that, you know, it was incredibly one-sided. That I watched the game, and that just wasn't really how I viewed it. Now, of course, when you are analysing the performances of teams, you do take their league position into account. So given where the two teams were at the start of the day, given what we expected maybe of this game, it's fair to say that Walsall were more impressive than perhaps what we would have expected from Barnsley. But in terms of the actual game itself, in terms of the balance of play, I didn't think it was quite as cut and dried as Walsall dominating. They set up very well, Walsall, and they set up to counter-attack with three players up front in Gordon, through the middle, Ismail and Blackett Taylor on the left, who are all mobile and pacey and skillful and direct. And apart from that, the three in midfield were basically, only one was allowed to venture forward at any given time, pretty much. So it was a defensive setup, and it worked to an extent. We know that Barnsley like to press very high. They commit men forward, including their fullbacks, and they often leave themselves fairly vulnerable at the back. We spoke on the betting show about how teams that press high tend to reduce the number of shots they face, but give up better chances when they do. And that's kind of what we saw play out. Walsall with three or four really good breaks, with three or four really good openings on the counter-attack. Aside from those counters, though, Barnsley did play on the front foot. They were, I would say, the team more comfortable in possession, and they didn't play their best. They were snatching at passes. They were not executing in the final third. Even so, there were a number of really good blocks from Walsall players. There were some good opportunities and openings created from Barnsley. And I think it was a bit revisionist afterwards just to say that they were dominated. They might have been lucky to be level, but all they needed was to get their head up in the final third and play one good final ball. And that's what they did eventually with Alex Mowat, and he was excellent all day. I just wanted to shout out Jack Walton, the goalkeeper, as well, because Adam Davis was out. He's with Wales at the moment, of course, and I think, you know, he's even at 26, a senior player for them, a leader and an excellent goalkeeper. I think there was probably some concern that Walton wasn't the replacement for him, but he made two or three fantastic saves. So for Walsall, it won't make them feel any better. They've played three of the top four in their last three games, and they've lost all three by one goal. So I think the feeling is that they're playing all right, that they've done well against the top teams, but that's not what's going to matter. Ultimately, it's five of their next six games against teams around them. Now, when you set up to play like that against a big team, can you do that effectively against a team where the quality is level, where you sort of match them? That's the big question.
Well, I think they've got to take heart out of that performance as well. Whether or not you agree that they dominated against Barnsley. I think what you can't deny is, at least in terms of chances created for that first 20-25 minutes, you know, they did. They were the better team. They were the team fashioning goal-scoring opportunities. And that's against a team in Barnsley who, you know, they've obviously kept another clean sheet on Saturday. But they are one of the best teams defensively in the league. For all of their good attacking play, it is that defensive solidity that they're built upon. So they can take heart out of it anyway. Mm. It's probably a decent time. I mean, their next game is Doncaster away. Doncaster, not in great form, but I think, as we'll speak about in a second, I'm not convinced the slump is necessarily that true.
Okay.
Because is their away form that's really, really poor. And they've been unlucky enough to have a lot of away games in pretty close proximity. And then after that, as you say, hopefully by the time they play Oxford after that, if Oxford have beaten Wickham on the weekend, then maybe that's not a six-pointer as we think it is now. But as you say, after that, the games do look very winnable indeed. And I think, although the last three games have been against Barnsley, Sunderland and Portsmouth, they lost all three games by a solitary goal, it's going to be difficult to put in performances where you feel like you're not getting the rub of the green. It was the same with Sunderland as well, a match that they can feel very hard done by in terms of coming away with nothing. And the same can be said of the Pompey game as well. So it's now whether or not they can brush themselves off. And I think if they put in those quality performances, then they should just about have enough to get out of it.
Yeah, Dobson was very impressive in midfield. Dean Keats picked up a bit of flack for maybe being not very good at using his substitutes. Apparently this is a bit of a thing amongst the Walsall fan base. They were, from what I saw, very much in agreement that the way he set up and the game plan was as good as it could have been for that game and should have resulted in a point at least. But that, even so, after 70-75 minutes, some of those players that we mentioned earlier were really blowing, were absolutely knackered, and he wasn't proactive with his changes. And of course, you know, right at the end, teams that concede late goals quite often are the teams who have tired a bit quicker. So something to look out for in the coming games for Walsall. What about Shrewsbury and Pompey, George? It was 2-0 to Portsmouth. They've got over their blip, haven't they? And they are probably the best away team in the division, I think. I mean, they just are so businesslike, aren't they, away from home? I think this was a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, they picked up 38 points away from home this season from 20 games. That's more than anyone else in the league. And as you say, for whatever reason, I still maintain it was probably the instability that came with the new arrivals in January that seemed to rock the boat a bit. But back to really good form. It's another typical Shrewsbury performance. They had chances early on and couldn't put them away and have come away empty-handed again. Jamal Lowe looked very, very lively indeed for Portsmouth, who seems to have regained... I think him and Ronan Curtis were so important early on in the season, and he seems to have regained that confidence, even if Curtis hasn't quite got back up to that level. And interesting to see, after all the strikers brought in, Pittman and Hawkins playing alongside each other.
Yeah.
After all that, and then they linked. I mean, it was a terrible mistake from the Shrewsbury keeper for the second goal, but they linked very nicely indeed. It was unbelievable. I mean, we don't really like to talk about pre-assists, but it's such a Brett Pittman thing to do. The header on the bounce into Hawkins from the mistake was a little bit of class, and a fantastic play from Hawkins to spot the run and play a perfectly weighted ball across. As we've always said, he is criminally underused, for whether rightly or wrongly, for Brett Pittman, who was the best striker in the league last season, in my opinion, to be used as sparingly as he has been this season is a massive shame. And despite James Vaughan coming in, despite Omar Bogle coming in, who's done very well since he's come in, I must say, it was heartening to see those two linking up very well for that win. And they do go into the playoffs, despite that. I mean, they'll be disappointed that it looks like the playoffs are going to be the likelihood, given the start of the season, and they're, you know, they were top of the league not so long ago. But the fact that they've regathered after that blip and the options they now have available to them means that they go into the playoffs, although they will go into the playoffs if it continues, is a huge chance of going up still.
It'd be interesting to see how we're discussing them in three games' time, their next three, at home to Peterborough, away to Wickham, and at home to Rochdale. Now, it sounds like you're saying that it's very unlikely they'll get top two. I get that, but I think they'll be closer than they are now in three games' time. So that could be quite an interesting end to the season. If they do head into the playoffs, well, it'll be fascinating to see who they come up against. They've lost twice to Charlton in the league this year. Charlton appear to have worked them out, certainly in that second fixture we saw at the Valley the other day, live on Sky. They've got the Checker Trade final coming up against Sunderland, so we'll see how those teams match up. They beat them at home, didn't they, in the league around Christmas time, and they play each other at the Stadium of Light in the second last game of the season. So Portsmouth officially over the blip. Kenny Jackett with some selection headaches of a good variety up front, and with Ronan Curtis still to come back, and hopefully you know, he can still get back to some form towards the end of the season. This is a team still very, very much in contention to be playing Championship football next season. Sunderland and Charlton didn't play this weekend. Peterborough are now in the playoff places. What a season of extremes, what a season of ups and downs. And it does feel more than almost any team that they are a side in the image of their owner, isn't it? Just real ups and downs. And and currently up to an extent. They're in the playoff places. They're in a good position. And they've got a new three-year contract for their beloved manager, George. And I know that that was something you were surprised to see.
Well, it's more difficult now to have a pop after a resounding win at home on the weekend. But
well, a win based on Marcus Madison set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, correct. And it feels a little bit like, and again, we'll talk about this later, when Darren Way was given his long-term deal at Yeovil during a time of seemingly, at best, mediocrity. And Darren Ferguson had been given the interim job and had done nothing of note that was positive. I mean, I read some fans suggesting that the performance levels were better, even if the results weren't. I didn't really see much.
Marginally.
I didn't see much evidence of that. Mm. But I mean, I know that the betting side of things isn't for everyone. But it does, even if you're not someone who likes to gamble themselves, the odds do provide some information about probability of what's going to happen for the end of the season. And as you say, Peterborough right now are in a playoff place. Doncaster aren't, but it's pretty suggestive that Doncaster, with their game in hand, are still 1-2 to finish in the top six. You can still get 7-2 on Posh finishing in the top six.
Is it unlikely that the bookies are being slow to react to Doncaster's slide?
Completely unlikely. Yeah,
unlikely,
because there'd be people out there who would be decimating that 7-2 if it was that wrong. The reason for it is because the performances aren't particularly good. They haven't been for a long time. I think I read that since October or November, Oxford are one of the teams in the bottom eight or nine, I mean, now we're a bit higher, who picked up more points than Peterborough since the first few months of the season. They are not a top seven team in their current form. So it's going to be interesting to see how Darren Ferguson gets on there. It'd be a massive surprise if they're not still in League One next season. But it just, if the plan was to give him the job, you'd have assumed the plan was to give the interim job to see if he was capable of taking the job on further. Mm. He did nothing to show that. So it just feels odd that Darren McAntony didn't just give him the job to start with.
Well, I thought it was quite telling that he had an interview on Sky before the game on Saturday on Sky Sports News, I think it was, Darren Ferguson, and he was asked about, you know, what is it about you and this club, Darren? First question. And he said, well, I've got a fantastic relationship with the chairman. Mm. And you just thought, oh, wow, the first thing you've said. Interesting. Well, I think it says a lot. And it'd be interesting because, of course, he has had a lot of success there in the past. Whether he might prove you wrong, whether they might be able to break into the playoffs, if Marcus Madison can continue his sort of one-man wrecking ball approach to that Posh attack, then, and especially if Ferguson can start getting a bit more out of the likes of Tony and Tomlin and Dembele when he comes back from injury, then, as we've said all season, they've certainly got some players that can hurt you, but they've never really felt like a team, I think, that hurt you compared to some around them. Blackpool are in the mix as well, George. They smashed Bradford 4-1. This was Gary Bowyer, the Bradford manager, playing against the squad that he built at Blackpool before leaving just at the very beginning of the season. He built that squad, and that squad of players have been performing so well all season for Blackpool, despite off-field distractions, of course. Now, the squad he's in charge of now, Bradford, on paper, in terms of what they've done in their careers, in terms of values and no doubt wages as well, much better, in inverted commas, than Blackpool, but doing the complete opposite, have had one of the worst seasons they could possibly have had, with a bit of off-field distractions. But more and more, the more they collapse, you start to wonder whether that was a bit of a convenient excuse for a group of players that haven't reacted to three or four different managers and just can't build on any sort of win, any sort of form at all.
Yeah, it seems impossible to stick up for them the one thing I can say about this was that they won the XG battle, if that's anything. I mean, they missed the penalty, which was at a pretty crucial time. But on the balance of play, I think it was kind of 2.5, 1.5, which suggests that they were unlucky to be absolutely thrashed. But, I mean, that is just a drop in the ocean, really, because they've been poor for a long time now. And there's a reason why they are, you know, the first team of this ridiculous relegation battle, the first team who I think we can probably relegate. I was very surprised to read what Gary Bowyer said about Armand Nondier.
Yeah.
Which so, seems very out of character for former Blackpool boss Gary Bowyer, who had a fantastic time at Blackpool.
He had a fantastic relationship with Big Armand,
well,
though,
but then
who's been banging them in under Terry.
Yeah, Phillips. But he was still, you know, Nondier was still there. You know, he brought him to the club and he was a striker there. Anyway, I mean, I'll let you...
Yeah, just for context, our great friends at Fox Punter, who do the Lord's work, scouring all the manager interviews, basically, for nuggets of goodness. And Mike shared this. Terry McPhillips, after the game, mentioning that some players signed by Gary were extra motivated today. And you wonder who that could be. And then you see Gary Bowyer saying, "We've worked all week on stopping crosses. 6'4" striker Nondouillet with some silly blonde dye in his hair goes unchallenged twice." And even in that quote, I can see the sort of relationship that they probably had when Bowyer was Blackpool manager. And for whatever reason, Nondouillet thriving under McPhillips and doing the damage against him.
And McPhillips has now said that he's a Premier League striker.
Right.
Having seen Armand Nondouillet play for Oxford, if he's a Premier League striker, then I think McPhillips is probably a Premier League manager.
I think in the same way that Doncaster are the best team in League One, Nondouillet is probably a Premier League striker. If you were to select, if you were to make like a 60-second compilation of his season, you could probably fill it with about five Premier League quality things.
And in the same way that Martin O'Neill said that Ashley Young was on a level playing field with Leo Messi when he was Aston Villa manager.
Great player.
Really good.
Ashley Young.
Nice.
Yellows, Oxford. We're going to talk about some of the big winners in the bottom part of the table now. And Oxford certainly in there. How much relief, George, going to the Rico and winning against Coventry?
Massive. And I'm taking all credit. Ever since I slagged off Curtis Nelson on the podcast, we barely conceded a goal. He's scoring winners. Huge, huge result. And since, you know, we've only conceded two goals since the Accrington shambles, this is, for all of the manager's talk about, you know, playing decent football and the attacking players that we've got, like Marcus Brown, like Gavin White, who was injured, like Jordan Graham, this... mission to stay up is, which is looking like it might be successful, is built upon a solid defence. And when you've got basically two centre midfielders playing as your fullbacks, that's a pretty good effort. Mm. And Sam Long playing right back at the moment, who's not got very many professional appearances to his name over the last kind of 6 years. So it's huge. And I'd say a key thing here is, you know, Simon Eastwood, who made his 150th appearance for the club. He, I think, probably no fault of his own, maybe just setting high standards, he hasn't been quite as crucial for Oxford this season. There haven't been as many games where you've left thinking, like, what the hell would we do without him?
I mean, this was one of them.
This was one of them. And that, you know, makes a massive impact, where he was so good, and he kept us in the game at 0-0, and then he kept our lead at 1-0 as well. Ian Dowie on Soccer Saturday was talking throughout the second half about how Oxford were fairly comfortable in the second half. I'm not really sure that's completely true, because Eastwood was so crucial to the win. It's now a really interesting time for the club, because Touchwood, I mean, it changes so quickly, but you think we're now in a position where it's unlikely we're going to go down. Mm. I think Ben Mayhew's graphic gives us under 10% chance of relegation now.
Yeah.
So it's been a shocking season. Carl Robinson told us to give him 12 months to build a squad. The squad is not good. The recruitment has been shambolic from start to finish. There's very little chance that the Carl's going to be going anywhere, and I think that's probably fair enough-ish. but it's just a case now of off-field troubles. I mean, a lot of Oxford fans seem to think that the off-field troubles have made a big impact on the pitch. I don't buy it at all. This is an expensively assembled squad. And because it looks like our defence is going to pick up the points needed to stay up, there have to be an inquest into how the team and the squad has been so chronically mismanaged.
Yeah, and there's going to be a big job on someone's hands over the summer to build another squad.
It'll be Robinson's. He's just got to learn from the mistakes, that's it.
Is Jordan Graham going to be there next season?
I hope so.
If he isn't, then current loanees, Brown, Graham, Garbutt, Sinclair, Curtis Nelson out of contract.
But I mean, only of those guys you've said, the only, I mean, Brown was never going to stay, but I mean, Graham is the only one. Garbutt can leave with everyone's blessing. Jerome Sinclair, we won't lose any sleep over.
Right, but you are still going to need actual footballers to be playing.
Yeah, well, it needs a huge rebuilding mission. Don't spend your highest wages on loan players who aren't fit. I mean, that's an obvious one. If you're looking at the players that Carl's brought in, Ricky Holmes, Sammy Carruthers, Ahmed Kaji, these are all players that have played for him in the past, who came with very little match fitness, and that's completely shown all season. I mean, what chunk of the budget has been taken up by those three? I dread to think. And it's just understanding that there are other ways of doing things. That's it.
Right. Well, it's not all over for Coventry. I think you can be understanding of a negative reaction to this one. I think from the good Cov fans that we follow on Twitter, it seemed like they're basically saying, unlucky not to have been ahead in the first half. In terms of performances, probably not that different to when we beat Fleetwood the other day, when we beat Peterborough the other day. We've just come the other side of it this time around. So, there's now four teams, Peterborough, Doncaster, Blackpool and Coventry, all within 2 points of each other, gunning for that last playoff spot. So certainly all to play for. Other big winners, George, were Rochdale. Big win for them against Scunthorpe. And it was Aaron Wilbraham at the double, the oldest player to score a brace in League One at 39 and a half since Steve Claridge in 2005. That was a stat that I enjoyed from Opta. Daily Dale said we absolutely dominated them, played some magnificent stuff. Kugosi and Clay has been unreal since Keith Hill's departure. Two goals from Aaron Wilbraham. And one for you, George. Also since Hill's departure, we're unbeaten in three, winning two of them. I'd like to hear what George thinks of that. Now, I think this is shots fired because you said it was stupid to sack Keith Hill or words to that effect, or probably something along the lines of there's no such thing as a new manager bounce and therefore they can't expect things to magically turn around. Well, Brian Barry Murphy, the caretaker, he's bouncing.
Yeah, I mean, fine. The performances have been very good.
They've had some nice fixtures, haven't they?
Yeah, they have had nice fixtures, but you can't... I still think long-term... It's not the it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do. There's nothing to suggest that these results wouldn't necessarily have happened had they not made the decision. It's probably unlikely, but we don't know that for sure. And I would just urge a bit of caution in blowing this trumpet now, given the precarious position that the football club's in. We also had Scunthorpe fans a few weeks ago telling us that Stuart McCall was the man to turn them around and they were out of the relegation zone. Today he's been sacked. We've had Bradford fans saying the same thing as well. So about David Hopkin, when it looked like they were going to get out of it, they're now all but down. Three games is a very, very small sample size. All three games were at home. All three games were against teams that they're battling relegation. Next up, you've got a much tougher run of games where you're going away to Gillingham, who are the informed team of this bottom half. Mm-hmm. You've got to host Sunderland, then you're going to Accrington, you're going to Pompey. So if at the end of that run, this form continues, then come at me, because at the moment it's still pretty precarious and I wouldn't be too cocky about the run of form.
Well, on that note, were you surprised that Scunthorpe sacked Stuart McCall on Sunday?
Not necessarily. We've said that their attacking output have been very, very fairly poor for a long time, not having very many shots, which is not a good thing for a football team. Not ideal, no. I actually backed Rochdale to win on the weekend because you could see that the numbers they posted against Oxford and against Shrewsbury were fairly decent, whereas as I mentioned, Scunthorpe was pretty poor. Whilst I'm not surprised to see them sack McCall, I think it's a mistake. I mean, the biggest mistake, quite obviously, was getting rid of the manager a year or so ago when they were in the
Graham
playoff
Alexander.
Positions. Yeah. And then, getting rid of an experienced guy who had them playing good football for two or so years and replacing him with a caretaker manager because of a brief run of... I mean, this is... Going back to the Rochdale thing, I mean, it's a similar scenario here. Because...
Doesn't reflect well on those running the club.
No, of course not. And then, as I said, it baffled me kind of before the turn of the year when... There was still talk around at Scunthorpe about reaching the playoffs. It was just a lack of understanding about what position the football team are in. I mean, you see with these clubs, happened with Oxford this season, when the expectations pre-season are much higher than relegation, there's normally like a day or a game where the club says, like, right, we are in a relegation battle, let's not ignore that. And that just never really seemed to happen at Scunthorpe. There was always this arrogance or this assumption that it was going to turn around. So I think that Stuart McCall is a very good manager. I think that if they'd kept hold of him, they may have gone down, they may not have done. I don't think they've necessarily increased their chance of staying up by ridding themselves of him. So I'm not surprised, but I don't think it's the right decision.
Caretaker Andy Dawson in charge until the end of the season. They have, as you mentioned, been a bit of a sacking club in recent years.
And them and caretakers called Dawes.
Yeah, well, exactly. The other guy, Nick Dawes, is now head of recruitment at AFC Wimbledon as of a few weeks ago, which is interesting. Their wage bill, and I can't speak for this season because those accounts obviously haven't been released yet, but if you look at League One financial data over the last few years, and I wouldn't have a go at you if you don't spend a lot of time looking at League One financial data, but Scunthorpe's wage bill compared to their turnover has been alarmingly high in recent years, and a little bit, I would suggest, like, well, one small parallel to West Brom's sacking of Darren Moore. I think there's a bit of panicking here. I think there's a lot of panicking here, because if you are not a team that turns over a lot of money and not a team with a huge fan base that doesn't bring in a lot of income, and you overspend on wages in order to try and punch above your weight, if you then don't do that, and especially if you get relegated, that can be incredibly dangerous. That can be that can be really worrying for a club and its short-term future. So Scunthorpe rolling the dice again, sacking Stuart McCall, Andy Dawson in charge for the last seven games to try and keep them up. Huge win for Gillingham at Wimbledon. This was a big game. We previewed it in the Match in Focus on the betting show, and neither of us predicted a Gillingham win. Maybe we should have known better, because in games against teams around them since January, this is what they've been doing. They've been winning tight games, and this was maybe even more impressive to have come from behind, and Wimbledon looked so comfortable after 15 minutes. But Gillingham turning things around, wrestling back momentum. Of course, there was a big goalkeeping error from Ramsdale, who's been so impressive on loan from Bournemouth with Wimbledon, but young goalkeepers do make mistakes, and that really cost Wimbledon. They couldn't drag it back after that. So congrats to Gillingham. They are now in the top half in 12th, and they feel, maybe if you're saying Oxford, almost certainly safe. Gillingham probably safe as well. Now, from a Wimbledon point of view, just something to look at, 9 years podcast, Wimbledon Pod says that was the fifth occasion they've gone 1-0 up at home this season, and they've lost 4 out of 5. Now, that is exceptionally bad, and that is something that really reflects why they are still so much in trouble, Wimbledon. They need to turn that around. A great performance from Burton, 2-0 down against Accrington, came back to win 5-2. Now, this is going to smack of a classic, overreacting to a good performance. But they're finishing the season strong at this stage. They're only 5 points off the playoffs at the moment. And Gab Sutton was at that one, very impressed with the midfield, said they played with real energy. And Cy Watts said, don't forget that at the turn of the year, they're only a few points above the bottom four, now 5 points off the top six. I'm going to say, George, that this could be a team to watch over the summer. I'd say they dealt with relegation about as well as could be expected. They were never going to throw money at it. They can't throw money at it. But some of the players they recruited, like Fraser and Templeton, if they can have another good window in the summer, it could be an interesting team next season.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you're not a massive fan of Nigel Clough.
I'm not a massive fan of his, but you also have to respect what he's done. And I think the performances over the last 3 or 4 months have been one of a top seven, top eight team. I guess the bottle to come back from 2-0 down at home and put Accrington to the sword as they have. I mean, there haven't been many games under John Colman where Accrington have been torn apart as they were here. It was abject in the second half. Also for Accrington, this is a massive, massive blow at 2-0 up on the back of that 3-1 win against Wickham. You're basically home and hosed. Mm. I was talking to a couple of guys on Twitter about who we thought were value to go down, and I'd be saying Accrington to their disagreement. But I was looking through it, and they've only won. I mean, if you look at their fixtures, they've got the games in hand.
Yeah.
And of their remaining games, only three of them are away from home, which you think is a big plus. But they've only won 2 of the last 10 games at home. A team who we always think are so basically so good with their home comforts as well. So and mentally to come back from it's going to be difficult. So yeah, I'm concerned for Accrington at the moment. Still to play Sunderland, still to play Luton, still to play Doncaster, still to play Pompey as well.
Tough run.
And as you say, I think for Burton, even though every team is doing their best to not get that last playoff spot, it feels like all the teams who get within touching distance are flailing a little bit. I still think they're probably just a little bit too far behind to muscle their way in.
Plymouth and Bristol Rovers played out the only draw in League One. It really was a great weekend for League One storylines. Only one thing to say here, and I just love our followers on Twitter, because at 11:40 p.m. on Saturday night, I'd got home from working on the highlights show. I had a bottle of Peroni watching some...
18 over. Listening.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was gambling.
And I tweeted the words Johnson Clark Harris, and we got 28 likes on it. People really moved for that one, and that's because he scored another absolute screamer. He is Bristol Rovers' top goal scorer this
season. I reckon people just thought that you were searching for it.
Wow, if they think that I would make a mistake like that after 10 years on Twitter, then they've got another thing coming.
Ed Ball's been on Twitter for ages.
Well, he's not as good at it as me. It was a sad day this week when the Not The Top 20 account overtook my own Twitter account.
Great day.
It was a sad day. But no man is bigger than the pod, as I said. Yes, Clark Harris, already Bristol Rovers' top league goal scorer this season, having joined right at the end of January. 7 goals in 9 starts. We love League One. We've been talking about League One for a while. We're going to talk about League Two next. Quest also love League One and League Two. They have shown a commitment to showing more of it on the Saturday night's highlights programme. I spoke to Colin Murray the other day about exactly why they have done that, and this is what he had to say. Colin Murray on the Not The Top 20 podcast. Very exciting. Thanks for coming on, Col.
Well, you've never asked me, and I've worked with you for 2 years. Just going to point that out. Never been asked.
It's not necessarily a podcast secret that I've worked on the highlights show, but it's not, you know, I like to keep my...
You don't like to cross the streams.
No, I try not to.
Well, I'm a proud man, I'm not going to beg.
No, you're right.
You know? I've hosted shows like EastEnders Revealed and Rise. People like me don't ask to be on your podcast, with that type of CV.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Well, thanks for joining. The reason why we're sitting down to talk today is that I am going to mix streams just for a bit.
Yeah.
Big news in the Quest EFL highlights sphere, and you're going to reveal to the listeners who haven't seen it already what the big news is.
Yeah, we finally managed to persuade people in suits with better cars and better paid jobs to extend the show by half an hour. You need an hour for the championship minimum. And the honest truth of the matter is the ratings are much higher for the championship than they are for League Two.
Yeah.
You sell adverts based on it and that pays for the show, and that it's a circle. So there's certainly no way you could ever do half an hour championship, half an hour League One, half an hour League Two. So we were always short of time for League One, League Two. And they've agreed to put an extra half an hour in until the end of the season.
And that's big, isn't it? Because you've been hosting this equivalent show last year on Channel 5, and that was never the case there. This is a big thing, I guess, for those people in suits to agree to.
Yeah, it is, because the whole thought process is that if you are on air with any other football when the match of the day is on, that everyone will go and watch that.
Yeah.
My argument's always been, no, if you're a League One and League Two fan, you need a little bit more than what we're giving them to justify staying to watch it. My argument's always been, I think there's a lot of League One and League Two fans who aren't watching the half hour before match of the day, because they're like, well, I get 20 seconds and you don't really have time to talk about us.
Yeah.
So it's a big experiment, and we've only got to the end of the season. So if people don't watch the extra half hour, I can't in the summer say, well, you've got to keep it like that next season. I will literally have to go, it was there for 2 months, and we fell off the cliff. Or it was there for 3 months and we increased across all of the League One, League Two, which I think now will probably be about 50 to 55 minutes with our breaks in there, obviously, like there always is, rather than 27 minutes. So it is a big jump.
Longer match edits and longer discussions or more discussions that we don't know yet exactly what it's going to look like.
I'll definitely push for more action. Yeah. I always push for more action than me and Ian Holloway talking absolute shite. But like, say you take a particular running order. The weird thing is you know, because you work very much at the very front of the League One, League Two analysis that we do, it's much more difficult to get it into 50 seconds or a minute than it is into two. So what happens a lot of time is I'll have to start the chats by going, say, you look at today. I'll just pick anyone out. We'll have a chat and you'll say, right, you're going to have to pay off Argyle. You're going to have to mention Scunthorpe, but we've only got a minute and you have to talk about Bradford Blackpool.
Yeah.
Now, those games haven't happened yet, so I don't know the results. But you'd find yourself just saying, that was a big win, that was controversial, but this is what we're going to look at. And we try and spread it around the teams. Mm. But of course, people don't watch every week, so sometimes they think we ignore their team. So now it'll be easier. Having 2 minutes is much better. To come off the back of, you know, Colchester United, Tranmere Rovers, and have 2 minutes is better than having a minute. Trust me, it's easier. And the pundit gets it. You get a chance more sometimes just to look at moments in the game. Yeah. So yeah, excited about it.
As the face of the show, you attract the majority, I would say, of the feedback. I think that's fair to say, from especially online on Twitter. Mm. And you, I would say, engage with it. Negative stuff, and you try and explain things pretty well. Has this been a big thing that you've seen week in, week out, about people saying you're not respecting League One, League Two?
Yeah,
it's hard to explain it in a tweet, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere else free to air that no one is going to go out and all of a sudden spend millions of pounds in the highlights for League One and League Two and then smash them on a channel for 2 hours. But the Quest, I think, have been really good because. And this is not disparaging towards Channel 5 or anything before that, but to my best of my knowledge, in my experience of working outside of Quest on AFL and just as a viewer, when there's only League 1 and League 2, everyone's scarpers, everyone's in Tenerife. We don't do that. We're here today. We're doing an hour for League 1 and League 2, and we've done that consistently all season. We've missed very few. We've done midweek shows. So Quest are completely committed to it because for them it's a big deal to have football highlights. It can sometimes get lost, I think, on a quote-unquote bigger channel.
Well,
so
I used to think...
I think that's the... So I will defend it, but I also get that we get it wrong at times. Mm. I also... What I try and explain to people is, right, the budget's low. Like, it really is. It's not... There's not 18 people putting this together. So when we do League 1, League 2, sometimes we will talk about where the club are, rather than a specific moment in that game. So when someone says to me, I can't believe you didn't put... a foul throw into the highlights that led to a goal for Burton Albion. I'm like, see, I didn't see it. That's why, right? Because we don't. It's impossible to think about it. You know, 72 teams on, and we do get some weeks we got all 72 teams, but we never really have less doing 66. So you know, it's one of those things. It all does come from really caring about it. So pushing to get an extra half hour is genuinely the team just wanting to do a better job of League One, League Two, to have more time.
Yeah.
We're not getting paid. It's not. We don't get paid a third more. I want to make that clear. There's no increase in that. Yeah. We haven't told the pundits yet. I think Ian Holloway thinks he's getting a third more.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing he's not that good at maths. So we'll probably be able to get that one by.
Also, the other thing I wanted to ask was, you clearly have a real appetite for being the presenter of the EFL Highlights show. That's been very clear to everyone who watches the show over the last 18 months, previously on Channel 5, now on Quest. It strikes me, maybe, that it's not just about work and money for you.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you like doing the EFL, let's say, more than
Honestly,
Match Day 2, which you used to do?
Because it was boring. So... radio's a bit of a challenge. Not as much some of the radio we do now, but like, say, putting together Blood on the Tracks for the BBC, that's a real challenge because that's a project of mine. I co-produce it. I put it together from scratch, and I love that. It's like really challenged to make a new format work. But if I'm going in to do 3 hours of radio anywhere, really, and getting in the morning, that's a challenge. That's creative, and your brain's full of stuff. Mm. TV isn't. TV is often dull. If you're watching football highlights and the presenter, I'm not even criticising this, I'm just saying, the presenter says to the pundit, well, you've just watched 90 minutes of football, disaster, wasn't it, at the back for Chelsea? And he goes, yeah, it was a disaster at the back for Chelsea, and all of a sudden you're seeing clips of why it was. They didn't make that after the presenter asked the question. It was made 2 hours before. The job of the presenter is literally just to facilitate the pundit to get into what he wants to talk about, and in some cases you have no say on it whatsoever. That's why the shoe never really fitted. This is different. So if we're in a meeting at 6 o'clock and the pundit says, I think this, you or I have no problems with turning around and going, we think the opposite, and we'll bring that on air. So that's what I like about it. It's also, it is a challenge every week. I do spend so much time in forums. because I haven't seen the game.
Yeah.
So I'm like, get into the forums, see what they're saying. Don't say something on air like, they were terrible today if you don't know. And also, like, don't say that team haven't scored in seven games. Go and find out why. So that happens a lot in our meetings.
So I always have images of you, like, using a login that's, like, sort of Belfast Pilgrim or Green and White Army.
I never post. I never post. I was tempted to post on Hull City this year.
Yeah.
Because I took a bit of stick for it to start a season, saying they would have a good season. I said, if you want to pick a dark horse in the Championship, you've got to come outside of 12 teams. Because there's 12 to 14 teams that probably think they've a good chance of going up this year. They're very open. That's proven to be the case. We got three teams battling at the top. We got a host of teams battling to get into the playoffs. You're probably only looking at, what, one team at the moment. Maybe you put West Brom on that and say they're in the playoffs too. But you knew it was going to... So I said, look, if you want a dark horse, you got to go to a team that nobody's talking about being in, and that's Hull City for me. Right manager, some young players coming through. And I took a bit of stick for that. In one particular form, and it, I did. I was so hovering over. I was going to type, "What do you think now, bitches?"
Belfast but Tiger.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, barely leave that alone. But yeah, so the answer to the question is, it's a challenge.
Yeah,
it is a challenge every week, and it's a buzz at the end, right?
But it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, buzz when you go home and you go, "We got that right."
Yeah,
and then you get it wrong, it sticks with you, and that's kind of what I've always wanted to do. I couldn't really sit and just do a plug-in. We always say there's two different types of presenter. We call them a plug-in presenter, and that's not a criticism, but they can turn up, read an auto cue, go home. Very generic, that's the way it is. And there's places for that, quiz shows, all that stuff. Or there's where you kind of are part of the production. So that's why I enjoy it much more.
Yeah.
And to be honest, as a Liverpool fan, I'm exasperated with hearing the problems of Liverpool fans. Yeah. It's like, you really don't have any problems.
Yeah.
And as football's changed a lot more, I'm no less a Liverpool fan, but I'm certainly more a Northern Ireland fan than I've ever been.
Yeah.
I find real singing, whether we win or lose. I find the trips more enjoyable because I see the same people every week. And there's a parallel between that and, I think, quote unquote, a local club.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy the interaction with Plymouth Argyle fans and Bury fans at the end of last season. And people have to get used to this with me. I'm positive. If your team have a problem on the pitch, I'm likely to concentrate on the team to beat you.
Yeah.
In the small amount of time I have on air, I don't want to come on and go to the pundit, look how bad they are. I want to go, look how good the other team are.
Yeah.
And that's why I always get loads of tweets going, you're a Blade, aren't you? And I'm like, no. You're definitely a closet Preston North End fan. I'm like, no.
Yeah,
you're a Tranmere Rovers fan. No.
You've definitely been biased towards Leeds and against Leeds.
100 times this season. I love Leeds fans. They're the worst, though, at the moment on Twitter for apparently I want them to win every game and apparently I want them to lose every game. It's just, I want to see Leeds United or Sheffield United go up. I think it'd be good for the Premier League. Have that big powerhouse Northern side in, Yorkshire side in. Doesn't matter to me which one.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to migrate slightly towards the underdog stories, which is how Sheffield United are even in the race this year is unbelievable. Thanks to Christoph Wilde.
Yeah, we've enjoyed all the different parts of Norwich's season as well, right? And seeing them develop into this title contender as well.
And the power that comes with that team because of this. You see, family club is seen sometimes as a negative thing to say. It's not. It's just like thousands, tens of thousands and tens of thousands of season tickets. A familiarity with, this is what we are. This is what we do. Such a strong team that when they get... I don't think there's the peril at Carrow Road. If the wheels came off now, the same season tickets are sold next year. And that's what's brilliant about it. That's what's brilliant about Norwich. And I love that, the strength that comes from that. There's definitely more peril when it comes to Leeds United, isn't it?
Yeah.
And rightfully so, the fans have been shat on so many times. So many times. Like, I go back, you're too young, love saying that in podcasts, but I go back to the Battles of Britain.
Yeah.
You know, the Mark Hatley goal for Rangers against them. I go back to when Leeds were massive. And my father, bad example, my stepfather, he goes back to when they properly ruled under Don Revie. So.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, it's all in your age, but I look at the league and just see Leeds as a massive club where the fans have had the wrong end of the stick for so long. That's why I want to see them do well. But I'm telling you now, if there were three other teams at the top, I'd find a reason to love them. I'd find a reason to be happy for them.
Yeah, we enjoy the stories, and that's the beauty of it. They're different stories every season.
I like to ignore the negativity. I don't want to be on air. It's so easy to snarl and be negative and point out someone's mistake. One of my biggest problems with punditry is, A, when it's generic, And I learned that the hard way, actually, when I started doing Channel 5. I used the phrase teams like on the first show, and it really turned a light on me. It's like, yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You do the bloody work. The other thing I can't stand is, so that's something that annoys my kind of generic, but the other thing I can't stand is when somebody points out that, say, a defender hasn't been quick enough getting back. Mm. He's out of his position, and you're like, yeah, but he's out of position to a guy that costs £40 million more than him. Mm. And the reason why he's out of position is someone had to go up for the corner.
Yeah.
And he's the best defender to go up for a corner. So I always find that, like, once they cross the white line, we forget about how much money, the unequal money of football.
Mm.
So that's just a random rant before you ask your last question.
Lastly, we've got to get back 10 minutes till kickoff. And another little peek behind the curtain is that the most fun bit, really, isn't it? The bit where it really doesn't feel like work is between 3 and 5 when we're watching the games. We watch all the championship games, the sort of live stream, but it's just the one camera and we don't get replays on the majority of them.
Nightmare.
So my question to you is, what percentage of goals do you think you actually see live? Because it's a big thing, isn't it? Someone will shout, goal! And you'll have missed it.
So we generally are quite good. If we've got 12 games in front of us, you and I would probably see live, I'm going to give us a good 40%.
I think more.
More? You do get a feel for it, don't you? You get a feel to go. I must disagree. The best bit is 10 minutes before, where we have a game, which is everybody picks the game that they think the goal is least likely to be scored in first. And whoever loses, wherever the first goal goes in, if you pick that game, you have to buy coffees for everyone. But the best thing was, when we started this game, 5 of the first 6 weeks, the loser was the least paid person in the team. Like, literally couldn't pay his rent. But there was, the principle was, you have to buy it.
Yeah.
And then we found out Ian Holloway, in the 2 weeks he was in, was slipping him money to buy it.
Why, really?
The kid's not going to learn.
Yeah.
He's not going to learn the hard way.
Well, he doesn't work here anymore,
right?
Does he?
No, he don't work. He can't work here anymore because he got bankrupt by buying coffees.
To recap, Quest is going to 2 hours.
Yeah.
You've been campaigning for it.
Yeah.
You've now got to stay later on a Saturday night, but generally you're a happy man.
We're not getting any more money. We're not going to turn overnight into Match of the Day production, but Quest prove yet again they are serious about doing it well. Mm. Right? Forget, it doesn't matter what button you click to watch it. You come in, it's in HD, we're at every game. I know next season there's plans, hopefully, to change again, where we're going to get more cameras at games.
Nice.
But that's TBC.
Yeah.
So obviously got to look at the budget with that. But yet again, like when they stay on for League One, League Two this week, they're yet again committing. I think that's what it's needed for a long time.
Yeah.
So you got to watch, you got to tell people, you got to watch that extra half hour. It won't be here next season, and I can't argue for it. So that's the key to it. So yeah, it makes our life easier. Hopefully the majority of that time will be for football, but a little bit more for chat as well.
Nice. Happy days. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks for finally inviting me on. Finally.
We've got to start our League Two section talking about Tranmere Rovers, the Super White Army. They beat Colchester 2-0 on the weekend. Now, 6 wins in a row for Tranmere represents a quite sensational run of form at a crucial time in the season. They're 5 points off the automatic promotion spots now with a game in hand. They've sorted out their away form, which was holding them back in the first half of the season. And Chris Hall tweeted us earlier to say, heard you on Thursday saying the League Two automatic promotion race is a 4-horse race. Would you now consider Tranmere to have crashed that party?
They're the fourth horse.
Ooh.
Oh, no. I mean, we can't,
who's the horse that's bolting?
We can't claim that. No, I was going to say Mansfield after their poor run. But no, I think that's totally fair enough. And you now, I mean, 5 points is a lot to make up on this MK Dons team, I would say. Even with a game in hand, we cannot assume that game in hand is 3 points, despite the good form. But if you had to pick a team at the moment who will be there to pick up the pieces, I mean, that Mansfield L column being 7 has come out of nowhere.
Mm.
You know, we were talking, it feels like just the other day we were talking about it being 2. I personally would probably, in a match bet now, have Tranmere over Mansfield.
Really? You're not just overreacting?
I think you're underreacting.
Okay. Well, maybe that's true. Tom Cavilla, who reports on the club, said that Tranmere were 8 points adrift of the playoff places after losing 2-1 to Northampton on February the 5th. That is just 1 month and 3 weeks ago. They're now 5 points off the automatic places with a game in hand, as mentioned. Now, that is an unbelievable turnaround, isn't it? And we talk about James Norwood a lot. We know that that's going to be one of the most interesting transfer sagas of the summer. But Mickey Mellon. I think we don't talk about Mickey Mellon enough. Let's rewind. Mickey Cantaloupe, as they call him in America.
Lovely.
Let's rewind. Mickey Mellon left Shrewsbury in League One to join Tranmere in the conference in the National League.
I was about to make such a bad joke. Yeah.
He dropped two divisions to take over, which at the time felt surprising. And the turnaround is stunning, isn't it?
It is.
And he... I think that first season they didn't go up, did they? The second season, they won the playoffs. I mean, so much can turn on a playoff victory, can't it? Because it's such a double-edged sword. But here we are looking at him definitely heading into another playoff campaign and possibly looking at a double promotion.
Yeah, you have to give him huge credit for it. Tranmere, a club who definitely have the infrastructure and you know the fan base to be successful at a higher level than League Two. It needed a manager to get the most out of the club, and Mellon's someone who's done that. I mean, eyebrows are raised. I'm sure we'll be sitting here in 2 years talking about how when John Sheridan moved down to Conference Club, National League Club Chesterfield. And you know, these are big clubs who they're attractive jobs because if you can, the expectations are high, but you can't really get much lower. So you're taking on a bit of a sleeping giant at the EFL level, I guess, or at League Two level at least. But he does deserve massive credit. And another one where, you know, probably facing up to a bit of criticism a few months ago. Mm. But the run of form since and keeping hold of Norwood in January is so important. And the run of form since has been so, so impressive that you wouldn't begrudge them going into the playoffs. If they don't make it into top three, I think going into the playoffs, you'd have to have them as the more likely at the moment.
Quite impressive as well. When we often talk about how it's worth following managers rather than teams because managers have, you know, it's up to them really how a team plays and how they develop. And generally, I would say at the lower levels, managers are fairly wedded to one system and have a even at the top level, to be quite honest with you, have an idea of how they want to play, have a perhaps a shape that they think is optimal for that. And in terms of profiles of personnel within that, the same sort of thing. They have a way they think works. I always think about Paul Cook and 4-2-3-1, which is basically hasn't done anything else for a whole career. But let's not forget that Cook was their top scorer last season. Cook now of Walsall, big target man type striker. He was the big man in the National League. And Norwood was his sort of foil. He was considered, I don't even think he was considered an exceptional National League player. Now, to have made the leap he has this season to become the goal scorer he's become has definitely caught people by surprise. People who have seen him for the last 5 years scoring goals in the National League, but not to this extent, are surprised at the finisher he's become. But also credit to Mickey Mellon for being able to change up and find a system that gets the most out of Norwood without having to pair him with a big man to hold up the ball to play him in, but actually as the focal point in a 4-2-3-1. So I think that was worth noting. Colchester, who they beat, they're unhappy at the moment. I was quite surprised to see the negativity towards manager John McGreal on the Colchester hashtag on Saturday. I asked Liam, who's a Colchester fan, whose opinion we respect. I said, is this just a bit of an overreaction? He said, no, not really. He said, the decline in form since Christmas is stunning and a very similar situation to last year. If we fail to finish in the playoffs, which seems likely, I think he should go because it would be a failure of a season. He doesn't have the skills to make game-changing calls. Our last 10 wins have been to nil, but if we concede, we can't respond. So Colchester are in a tough spot at the moment. They're 4 points now below Exeter and they've played a game more. So a really disappointing few weeks. They've dropped out of contention. Back towards the top, George Lincoln, binned off Crawley, 3-0. They've gone top of the league. Them being vulnerable league leaders, that didn't really play out, did it, mate?
Still, again, I wouldn't be too blowing your own trumpet now. 8 points
I'm
clear
not blowing my
top.
Trumpet. You said...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm saying they haven't won the league yet,
no,
is my point.
Mm.
I mean, as anyone who listens to the betting show will know, did we talk about it? We didn't even talk about it. That's a shame because I delete that part. I was going to... Yeah, they haven't won the league yet. it was a very dominant performance over a poor Crawley team, it must be said. But it doesn't look... There's no sign of it slowing down. It was a big point they got away at Mansfield, and the fixtures from here on in I mean, they've still got to play. They've got to go to MK Dons after you assume they'll see off Macclesfield in the next game at home. That trip to MK Dons could be the fly in the ointment if they get beat there and the guys behind them pick up some points. But realistically, Lincoln are going to be a League One team next season, whether they win the title or not. And I think that Danny Cowley probably at the moment doesn't really care if they win the title or not. And they'll be a force to reckon with next year.
Correct answer. Tom Farmery, journalist, was at this one. Tweeted, didn't really get picked up this, but we picked it up because we don't miss much. Felipe Moraes, Crawley senior player really in that dressing room, and actually was part of the caretaker team in between management, in between Kewell and Cioffi. Well, Tom reported on Saturday that as Gabriele Cioffi was doing his post-match press, Felipe Moraes walked down the tunnel past him and said, "It's not going to effing change, is it?" And I thought that was kind of interesting. That it just seems quite blatant in front of reporters to be talking like that, but also perhaps not all well in terms of some of the senior players and how they think about Mr. Cioffi. I think it's fair to say that we have not been convinced by this Crawley side all season. And so one to keep an eye on there, guys. Bury couldn't get past Grimsby. That one was 0-0. Not that a draw and a clean sheet away from home is a bad result, by the way, but it does mean that Lincoln now have an 8-point gap, having played one game more over Bury. Mansfield, as you mentioned, they've dropped points again. A loss at home to Crewe. Unbelievably surprising, this one. And not just because I thought they were going to win and picked it on the betting show, but, you know, they'd lost 2 out of 19 home games and Crewe had won 2 out of 19 home games. But there's a vulnerability to Mansfield. We've never quite been able to put our finger on what it is and why it is.
The manager.
But maybe it's the manager. Flitcroft himself, I thought this was interesting as well. He said, they've let themselves down today as a group. They've not run for each other on and off the ball. Now, I would suggest that that is a dangerous quote at this stage of the season.
Especially given the talent they've got in their squad, who would the board, who would the fans rather dispense with? You know, they're attacking talent or the manager. There's no question in my book.
Well, they lost to Notts County the other day, didn't they? And it was desperately poor performance. And there was a sense that the players didn't want it enough, which just seems so surprising at this stage of the season in the position that they're in after last season's disappointment as well. I would suggest that if I was a player and the manager said, we've not run for each other on and off the ball, that's different to saying they had an off day or they didn't execute what he wanted them to going forward or at the back or something. It seems a bit more personal to me. So interesting to see how Mansfield react in the coming weeks. Who else have we got? We should talk about MK Dons. I think there's not too much to expand on here. Chuksunike scored a nice goal for them. They won 2-0 against Yeovil and they are now in the driving seat in terms of the automatic promotion place. But the defeat for Yeovil at Stadium MK led to, or not just that defeat, but rather what's happened over the last 3 or 4 months, has led to Darren Way being sacked. And we've spoken plenty about Darren Way. It's not a surprise for us, George, is it? It's not necessarily something that will lead to their imminent safety. It's not necessarily something that will lead to their imminent relegation, but this could have happened, or it felt like it could have happened a few weeks ago, maybe even a few months ago.
Yeah, you've got to wonder the kind of the financials of this because of the new deal he was given back in November.
So he had a contract, they said, until at least June 2021. So 2 more seasons past this. As you say, that if it is a sacking, that is not a cheap sacking.
No. The early link, at least, in the betting markets is Daryl Clark, which geographically would make sense. You'd probably think, you know, he's already been there, done that, and taking a team down and having to get them back up again to the National League. You might think that there'd be a bit of a clause in there saying that if he can't keep them up, you know, they'll part ways, because I'm pretty sure he could get a job at a slightly higher echelon than
Yeovil. I don't think he's taking that. I just don't think he's taking
that. Well, you know him, mate.
You know, I'll send him a text.
Your mate Daryl. But it might, as I say, it might be a good job just to take to now to the end of the season. If he keeps them up, brilliant job, another string to his bow. If he doesn't, not his fault.
Yeah.
And it's local. And Yeovil feels like the kind of club with a new owner who could do with someone like Daryl Clark, who just comes in and just is given free rein to, you know, sprinkle a bit of magic dust over it all, because it all feels a bit tired at the moment.
It does, doesn't it? And apparently it was the outgoing owner Mr. Fry. It was his decision to sack the manager. So that's kind of interesting. The new guy clearly not fully settled in the seat, as it were, at the moment. I think, you know, we've said a lot about Darren Way, so it would feel a bit harsh just to slam him here. So I think it's probably worth mentioning that when we say that we think a manager's not doing well, when we say that we think a manager should go, or we think their tenure has been bad and that they can't turn it around, it doesn't mean that no one else is to blame. And for whatever reason, in the media and on this podcast as well, we don't spend much of a proportion of the time talking about those making decisions at board level and how they've got it wrong as well. Maybe we should do more of that. I mean, it is up to those running clubs to understand who is right for them, who they can afford to provide a clear remit for a manager, to explain that remit to the fans, to communicate with the fans. That can make a huge difference as well, to give the manager a foundation to succeed, to support that manager as much as they can, as long as they're fulfilling that remit, and not to make strange decisions on a whim. And you can't say that Yeovil, at that level, have been making the right footballing decisions for the last few years. They've been on a downward spiral, and they've got 7 games to make sure that doesn't end in them dropping down to the National League. Forest Green beat Port Vale 2-0, with Colchester losing and Carlisle drawing. This was a very valuable win for Forest Green, who are so good away from home. Rhys Brown and Norman Smurthwaite are the two names to discuss here. The 10th goal of the season for Rhys Brown. Also, contract up in the summer. Him and Norwood, they're going to be the big sort of bargains this summer, I guess.
When I think there's still a chance that Norwood could stay if they go up.
Fair point.
And possibly, I mean, Brown's probably less likely, I think.
Different profiles, isn't it? Norwood spent his career in non-league so far. Brown was a starlet, really, of the Birmingham Academy, and never quite made the grade. The normal sort of question marks about attitude at that age and stuff. Well, he certainly earned his shot, at least at League One level. It'd be interesting, given his technical quality, given what he can do on the ball, and some of the goals he scored recently as well from central midfield. You know, that's the sort of skill set that plenty of teams in the Championship will fancy looking into. Norman Smurthwaite is the Port Vale chairman. He has been at loggerheads with the fans for the last few weeks. He has a seemingly quite a large ego, and that ego has been wounded. And he has said that he will not put a penny more into the club post the 5th of May. So if they don't find, or if he doesn't accept a bid, essentially, and find another owner, and he's been rejecting bids from a local business who have been trying to buy the club for the last few months, saying that he hasn't seen proof of funds and that the bids are not acceptable. Well, if they don't find a buyer by the 5th of May, then the club could well be put into administration. That could have a knock-on effect in terms of points deductions, etc. How often do we see this? Someone taking over a club and essentially either not understanding what it's gonna take, not understanding how much of a financial strain it's gonna put on them, not understanding perhaps how best to keep the club on an even footing, to keep it stable, and then having an issue when things start to go wrong and start having their ownership of the club, their stewardship of the club questioned. Norman Smurthwaite seems here to have taken it to an extreme, and his comments on local radio were amazing on Saturday. It really was incredible to listen to someone talking in that way, but it's a bit of a mess at the moment. The big hope is that this local business can provide an offer that he will accept. The difficulty is that he owns the stadium separately to the football club, and it seems like it's unlikely he'll sell the stadium. So there might be a situation that Oxford are in, George, which I'm sure you can confirm is not ideal, where the club could be owned by someone and the former chairman could own the stadium and they would have to pay rent to him. So not a good situation there. Notts County, George, they played against Exeter for 70 minutes against 10 men and they barely created a chance. Add insult to injury, they conceded right at the end. Doomed seems to be the word that people are using.
Yeah, that little brief renaissance seemed to be short-lived, sadly. Yeah, I mean, that's an appalling performance on Saturday to not be able to given the position that they're in at home, to not use that slice of luck to their advantage. It was not good. And any threat of that unlikely survival seems to have fizzled out.
Carlisle could only draw on the weekend, and they're in a pretty poor run of form, just 1 win in 9, which, you know, not to blow anyone's trumpet, but given I went back to your poor Lincoln vulnerable league leaders prediction, I will mention
my
that
poor prediction again.
That was poor. They are going to win the league. It's only fair to mention that you never felt convinced about Carlisle, and you were quite vocal about that, and you had a really enjoyable bit of kickback online from Carlisle fans who couldn't see what you saw, but on the current form with 1 win in 9, it looks like they are falling away, 3 points now off the playoffs behind Exeter, and have played a game more. If the playoffs started tomorrow, George, I think it'd be quite fun. Mansfield would play Exeter. Exeter going for their third playoff appearance in a row, lost in the final the last two, and Tranmere against Forest Green would be super tasty.
Yeah, I think you'd have to side on current form with the top two there, but as you say, loads of teams going for it, and you know, we're talking about it as if we're at the end of the season. There's a lot of football to be played, and I think Tranmere fans, especially right now, would say to you, can you not lump us in there, because we have slightly higher aspirations?
Yeah, fair point. There's a pretty good, it's a pretty bad record for teams who suddenly get flagged up on the pod, suddenly go on everyone's on the radar, Coventry being a good recent example. Cambridge were the team that drew with Carlisle, and they could have won it in the end. Giovanni Brown missed a big chance at the end. Just a reminder, we spoke about it at the top of the podcast, that Giovanni Brown is one of 6 or 7 players being added to the Football Index platform this week. We think Thursday morning is the day for it. I probably haven't sold him that well, saying that he missed a big chance at the end there. But he's a skillful player. A lot of League Two observers really rate him and think that with his technical ability, if he can improve his consistency, then he could play at a higher level. So it could be one to watch. Reece Brown, we spoke about earlier, he is on the platform at the moment at a price that I think is... you know, pretty attractive for a player that we think might be playing at a higher level. Remains to be seen how far these guys can go. Swindon binned off Morecambe, 4-0. Morecambe rather rolled over here. Kieran, Swindon fan, said, couldn't tell you much about Morecambe because from what I saw, I'm not sure they even turned up. Ooh. And lastly, Stevenage and Macclesfield drew. Cheltenham's impressive home form continued with a win against Northampton. And Joe, Cheltenham fan, flags up Luke Varney. He's been banging them in for Cheltenham recently. They need to get him on a new contract for next season. 13 for the season now, a very impressive minutes per goal ratio as well. Thanks for that, George. You enjoy that one?
Yeah, it was quite long, but it was good.
It was quite long, but we enjoyed talking about League 1, League 2. Enjoyed talking to Colin about League 1 and League 2 getting a bit more airtime on Quest. Thanks very much for joining us, guys. We'll be back on Thursday with a betting show previewing the EFL weekend. It's a continued joy to talk about the EFL to you, and we hope that you enjoy it. Please share it if you do, and we'll talk again very soon.